Welcome to All Over the Map. Take chances and ask questions.
Open discussion on all topics. The driving force. Get her done. Laughter is medicine for the soul. It's a small world after all.
It's Ling again. It all started with a penalty being called, and then Wade kind of got into it with Jody Shelley. David Ling played a little bit with the Canadians.
Unbelievably proud to have David Ling, good old Linger, on All Over the Map. David played for the Montreal Canadiens, Columbus Blue Jackets, and then took his career overseas and played in the East Coast Hockey League as well. So, on today's episode, we get to hear all about Linger's story. Have fun, enjoy, keep those ears percolated, you're in for a good one. If you enjoyed the episode, it would be very nice if you could leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And you can also follow us on Spotify, YouTube, and all major podcast platforms. All right, we'd like to welcome David Ling, Linger, to All Over the Map. I really appreciate you coming on the show today, David. And, you know, we'll get into some good stuff here. I know you got a wealth of stories in that melon of yours. So anyways, right off the bat, super serious question. I asked Robbie Shrimp this when I had him on the show. If you were to do anything other than playing hockey, you know, if there was would have been a plan B, what would it have been? If it wasn't hockey, what would it have been?
Good question. I think you would have saw me on the TV, the U.S. election today. I was what a ran president or something. No, I something to do. And my dad was a doctor and my mom was a nurse. So would have been something to do in the medical field or a policeman, as every child's, you know, every child wants to be the police guy.
Well, Rob Shrimp wanted to be a pig farmer.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
I'll bust his balls about that later. Anyways, so as we talked about before in depth, you know, it's all about the stories and, you know, so many stories. So I'd like to hear a bunch of stories about some Linger and Doty Wood stories, please. And hopefully
I played in Kansas City for 2 years. Doty was there coming off a NHL career. He was coming from San Jose and he got down into the minors, and we ended up playing on the same line together. And two games into the year, he comes over and goes, you take the, I'll take all the big guys. You take the little guys. So the rule was, if any guy his height or shorter came to fight, I had to jump in and take over. But any big guys, he took them over. And I remember about 10 games in, Kyle Friedrich came over. He's about 6'6", pushes me, and Doty comes in and twists his jersey up in a tight little knot, and the guy drops, knocked him out with just twisting the jersey up, tightened it, and KO'd him.
Holy shit. Yeah, the magic jersey. Yeah. So what was it like being on the road with Doty? I heard he was quite the prankster.
Yeah, if he wasn't trying to either cut your pants or glue your shoes to the floor or hide your furniture from your hotel room, then he just wasn't being Doty. Like that, you knew if something happened. It usually was me on other teams, but if it happened in Kansas City, Doty got blamed.
Awesome. All right. So, doesn't it feel like sometimes that you've lived 1,000 lives all compiled into one?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, 'cause when you reflect, you're like, my first year pro was 20, you know, 30 years ago. And you're going, wow, where did the time go? And you're like, and it feels you've experienced so much that it does feel like 1,000 years.
Yeah, it's like we were talking the other day there. It's like you talk to some of your buddies back home, the same age as us. It's like you live more in 4 days than they have their whole bloody life.
It's true. I grew up in PEI and some guys haven't even left the island.
Exactly. So, yeah, so you're the pride of PEI. Yeah, with 1,000 lives behind them. I mean, and 1,000 lives to go, hopefully.
All my stories are lies.
They're all lies.
All lies.
All lies. I don't, that's bullshit. I'll call you on that bullshit. Yeah. So yeah, it was interesting. We actually met on the phone when I was 17 and you were 17. You were playing for the Frontenacs, and we have a mutual friend, Todd McDonald. Do you guys ever talk still? I know he always was bragging about Linger and telling stories about you guys back in the day.
Whenever I see him in the summer, he's living in the States now. Yeah. So when I think in Cleveland or Kentucky, or, and whenever I see him in the summer, we have some good laughs for sure.
Yeah. Oh God. That guy used to make me laugh so hard. Just looking at him, we used to get in trouble just because we'd be laughing hard for no reason.
Have you ever met a normal goalie though?
Never. No, I don't think I've ever met a normal hockey player.
You're talking to one now.
Oh yeah. I forgot. And you're a psychologist on the back end too, right?
Yeah.
Anyways. So, road to the NHL. What was that like, you know, coming from PEI and then obviously, you know, realizing your dream? What was that like?
You know, growing up, you dream about playing hockey, but being from PEI, you're so far away from the NHL. There's not a lot of guys playing in the NHL that you can kind of role model yourself off of. But, you know, you're always dreaming. And until I think until I went to the OHL in Kingston, I didn't really think that how close I was and how close that my dream would be to coming true. And, you know, until I moved to Ontario, it was tough to really, I thought that I wasn't good enough. I thought I was so far away from the NHL just because the competition in the East just wasn't the same. And then when I went to the OHL and realized, you know, I can play with these guys, that my dream was a lot closer at 17, knowing that there was a chance.
Yeah. Absolutely. So what was your best memories on and off the ice playing for the Kingston Frontenacs in the OHL? There's probably too many to name. Let's think about two if you can.
Off the ice. There wasn't too many bad stories off the ice. So I would have to say graduating from high school in Kingston. And on the ice, you know, we won the division one year, and that was a big thing on the ice, and scoring your 50th goal in a season was a big thing as well.
Was that your big year where you had 135 points?
I can't remember, but I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not talking stats here, not at all. Maybe you had 50. To score 50 in any league is an accomplishment.
Yeah, and you know, I had the opportunity to get, my coach played every, you know, he played us every second shift. So we not only did I have a good year, but we were put in the position to get a lot of ice time and be put in all those 2-minute power plays. So it was coaching definitely helped and probably gave me 30 extra points.
Awesome. And you know what says a lot about your character as well as when I actually posted that you're going to be coming on the show, I think it was Doty that told a story, and then Dave Chizowski actually backed it, that you actually almost gave up a 40 goal season in the IHL playing for the Kansas City Blades to give old Doty an open net for a goal.
And you know what? I remember the night we were in Milwaukee and we were, I had two goals and he had two goals, and I ended up blocking a shot, first one ever, and going down with an empty net, and they stopped, and I look back, and Doty's the next person coming, and there's about 10 seconds left, so I just left it in the crease for him to come in and take a slap shot into the empty net, and I think there was like 1 or 2 seconds left for him to get the hat trick. And you know, he was the fighter, the protector, not, you know, he got a lot of points in the minors, but wasn't like the go-to point guy, and so it was good to, you know, he protected me a lot, so it was good to pay it back to him.
Oh, I thought you dished it over him so he could score his 50th.
No, he might have been his 18th.
Oh boy. Anyways, so getting drafted, obviously, you know, that was a big thing. You know, what was it like there on draft day? Did you actually go to the draft?
Yeah, and you know, I was rated in the 6th, 7th round, but I was like, you know, I'm I want to go to the draft. I want to experience it. And if I don't get drafted, you know, in my brain, I knew that there might be a chance where I'd go to Quebec City and not get drafted and have to travel home. But I, you know, my dad went, my grandfather went, my brother was there, and it was just, it was in Quebec City. I ended up getting drafted in the 7th round to the Nordiques, and it was just, it was surreal and something that you never forget. It's like, your first NHL game, your first NHL goal. It's right up there with that same feeling.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, what first NHL game, how'd that feel? A little nervous or what?
It called up more in skate. I felt like I was a novice player playing against junior kids because my hands were shaking. I couldn't make a pass. Every pass was off, but it's hockey night in Canada at the Bell Center, Montreal Canadiens against the Boston Bruins. Like, so it's set up there for a first game of a bag of nerves. And it was, I think I had about 10 shifts. And after, you know, you get on the ice, it's just a ball of adrenaline. And you don't even remember half of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it seems like the common denominator with a lot of I asked that question to a lot of the guys that have been on the show, that their first NHL game, just a bundle of nerves and just the emotions running high, the adrenaline. And then, I mean, at the Bell Center too. I mean, I've been to games at the Bell Center. It's nuts.
There's a picture in the Gazette the next day, me hitting Bork, but it doesn't show that after the picture was taken, I fall down and he goes down and gets an opportunity in the offensive zone. But it looked like I'm nailing him in the picture. So it was a keeper and it's on the wall.
All right. Hey, so we don't want to make this all about, like, you know, Dodie Wood or whatever. What's your favorite? It might not be the favorite, but, and I don't want to get you in trouble with any, like your job or anything like that, but what's your maybe not your fondest memory, but your, the memory that stands out the most, Dodie and you off the ice.
Well, I won't throw myself under the bus, but I remember we were at an
establishment. Yeah, throw him under the bus.
Yeah, we were at an establishment, and there was these guys just picking on Dodie and, you know, giving Dodie the eye, and he looked at me and goes, "Watch this." And I looked away and looked back, and and everything was being thrown, and I beelined it for the door.
You ran, and Dodie, he stood in there and took a few and threw a few, or what?
I had to leave him to fight for both of us.
Oh, jeez. Sounds like him.
No, we did have some really good stories, and a lot of them are at the rink and on the ice, just him being a character guy that would always play practical jokes and do things. I remember, you know, walking out of the rink with a suit on with one pant leg cut. And so one side's shorts and one side's a pair of pants, and you're walking out of the room because he's got the other part of your pant leg in his pocket.
Oh, jeez.
Like that doesn't stop.
So, how tough has the transition been from obviously hockey into a so-called normal life?
You know, it's the way I did it. It took me about 5-year process. I ended up going back and playing in the East Coast League in January, 3 or 4 years in a row. So I would spend September, October, November, December, almost retired, and then get the opportunity to go back. So I got the feeling, tried to plan. So it was more than just open the door, close the door. But, you know, it's a tough situation. I reached out to former players. I went in and met with Brendan Shanahan, and he said, you know what, the changing from hockey to the real world, everyone goes through it. Gretzky felt it. You know, it's not just the guys that were borderline players or the guys that played in the minors or the guys that played in the East Coast League, that they were battling changing hockey to a regular career or a regular job. And it's tough. It's tough mentally, because you're looking for that high that you're replacing from hockey, and you never find it. And if you don't realize that you're never going to find it, you're just searching, and it happens in all aspects of life when you're searching for that next high and you just can't find it.
Yeah. It's not an easy transition at all.
No. And there's a lot of concussions or a lot of mental illness in not only hockey, but in all walks of life. And it's just, it's everywhere. And to to not be able to get into a situation that you love and or replace hockey and have to do something else. It's like taking a toy away from a kid and the kid crying. It's tough and it's hard. And I don't wish it on anyone. And I try to reach out to guys that are going through it. You see guys on Twitter and you see guys on Facebook, and I try to reach out to them and say like, hey, it's normal. What you're going through is normal. And you're not an odd duck.
That's a great analogy. Yeah. That right there, I think it helped a lot of people. That message right there is very profound. Thank you. So what's the most sensible thing you've heard a person say?
Most sensible.
Yeah. The most sensible thing that a person's ever said to you.
Live in the now.
That's the present moment, the eternal now. That's all we got right now.
Yeah. No, so,
not the easiest thing to accept sometimes when you're going through a transition, eh?
or any form of anxiety or nerves. It's hard to get in there now.
Sometimes. What's anxiety? What is even that? What does that feel like? What does depression feel like? What does post-concussion feel like? Holy Christ. If people look it up, I mean, there is a lot of people that know. I mean, I don't want to make this all about me, but by any means, but, you know, working in the mental health field, as far as being an advocate, you know, it's, one of those things that,
Your book will be better than anyone's book though.
Oh Christ. I wrote one book already. I started writing book number two, and, I think I've hit a bit of a writing block. I don't know if I want to say half the things that are in my mind and my heart. Christ, I don't want to scare people. Anyways, but so what life lesson did you learn the hard way?
The hard way. That's a tough one, you know, because there's a lot of lessons you just learn from experience. And, yeah, you know, there's things even in my hockey career that I learned the hard way. You know, I might not have partied as much as a younger kid and took the game more serious, but then I reflect back and go, would I have been the same player because I didn't have that edge, or I didn't have that guilt of playing different ways. So, you know, in hockey, I think that would have been one of the life lessons that I learned that I probably should have, you know, took the game more serious.
Yeah. Yeah. You and me both. But you made it. You got her done. So do you think crying is a sense of weakness or strength?
I'm a crier. I have a crying gene I got from my mother, and anyone that knows me knows that I can cry at, I cry at movies. I cry when the Stanley Cup's presented. I cry when cute kids on TV. So I have the crying gene. So it's definitely a strength. And I think that the whole man population should, you know, cry more.
I think so too.
It does release. You build things up in your head and you build things up in your body. And when you cry, it's almost like you release it and you get some relief. And I think that we were brought up to be tough and not to cry. And I think that that's the weakness, is not allowing yourself to cry.
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely bang on. Yeah. I'm a crier too. I just don't cry in front of people that often. It'll usually be on my own. The odd tear might shed here and there, but sometimes, you know, you got to release those emotions, and you know, to have them bottled in is unhealthy. I think crying is a very healthy thing, and it makes you more of a man to actually cry. I mean, we're driven on the emotions anyways, and there's nothing wrong with being emotional, especially when you've played a game like hockey or any athletics or relationships or whatever. It's, you know, it's emotional. And I mean, if you don't feel emotions, it means you're not human.
No, I agree. And I think growing up in the 80s and 90s, the male population was supposed to be tough.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what do you think the difference is between living and existing?
I think it's existing. You wake up and you go to bed. I think living, you have a plan and a purpose, and you touch other people than just yourself. The purpose is to, you know, you have a family, you have a spouse, you have parents, and, and to reach them and make their days and their lives better. I think that's the difference between, you know, living and just being present.
Absolutely. Yeah. You never know who you're going to affect with just a smile or opening a door up for somebody. I always say, you know, just treat people kind.
I remember I was 13 and I played a terrible game in PEI and a little kid asked me for my autograph and I was in a bad mood and I kind of brushed him off and my dad grabbed me and gave me a lesson that I never forgot. He said, you don't know what he's dealing with at home and you just brushed him off. And if you would have gave him that thing, you could have gave him 5 minutes of, you know, happiness or excitement. You don't know where they're coming from and don't ever overlook people when they're approaching you for different things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, obviously you're probably one of his role models but you know, you're young, shit happens. You know, you win some, you lose some. Hopefully at the end of the day,
a life lesson.
Absolutely. Isn't that what this all is anyways? Is a bunch of lessons all connected. Christ. So what gets you excited about life these days?
It's definitely not as exciting, but I live, a lot of my excitement comes from other people's excitement, my kids, my family, and seeing the smiles on their faces is especially my two boys, seeing the smiles on their two faces is exciting for me.
So, and they're both in hockey right now too, eh?
Yep.
Yes.
They play rep and they're not bad. If I could put them together, I'd have a really good player.
Why, one's offensive and one's a fighter or what?
Well, one works harder and one's more offensive. So we put them together and we might have a good one.
Right on. So what's your message to the next generations of kids growing up, you know, beyond sports and athletics?
You know, I always just try to say, live it the best way you can and give it your all and give it your all, meaning work hard. Don't hold anything back and have no regrets.
That's a great answer. So any other stories you want to get into here before we kind of wrap up a little bit? Is there anything
stories on what? I have to be somewhat careful.
Well, you got to be very careful. You don't want to get fired from your job.
Right.
And you want to be able to share this as well, because there's a lot of good message that's come from this for sure. And
yeah, there is. And I like, you know, there's a place for certain stories and yeah. You know, I love talking hockey and I love talking my experience, because a lot of people don't get to experience, you know, one game in pro, let alone 20 years. So it's, I like talking hockey and I like giving my experiences.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we all know our era, you know, the hockey culture is a lot different than it is nowadays. And actually talking to Dave Chizowski a couple of days ago, he was the assistant coach last year for the Vancouver Giants in the Western League. And he was telling me it's completely changed. You know, there's not all the rookie hazing and all the crap that we had to deal with back in the day. That's all changed. You know, obviously still there's, you know, politics with the parents and whatnot. But you know, that's all part of, athletics in general. So,
and even recently playing in the East Coast League, you know, you never see guys coming in with a alcohol hangover. They come in with a gaming hangover. It looks like they've been up all night playing video. So it definitely is that the beer has been exchanged for protein shakes and it's for the better. I think that the new generation I think that our culture drank more because we didn't know what anxiety was. The kids now know what anxiety is. They know how to deal with it. They have different avenues. We didn't know, and we didn't have any, no one talked about it. We didn't even know what it was. And then when you did get anxiety or nerves, you fueled it with the way, self-medicated with whatever made you feel good. And I think
it was just normal. Like I didn't even know how to drink before I left home to play hockey. I had no clue. It was older guys that were pouring it down my throat half the time my first year. And then I just,
it's always someone else's fault.
It's always somebody else's fault. I did nothing wrong. I absolutely did nothing wrong throughout all my whole life. Actually, I've been perfect. Even those 500 days I spent in prison, I was innocent. I did nothing wrong. It was an imaginary line at the border with a few plants that went across. I did nothing wrong. I was completely innocent. I told
everyone. And everyone in there was not guilty.
Everybody in there was innocent. I told one of the border guards that I was actually having a picnic underneath the Space Needle with a girl, a nice girl that I just met. And four knapsacks came flying out of the sky with a parachute on it, landed right beside us during the picnic. Next thing I know, I got the feds surrounding me with guns drawn to my head. Now I'm here in jail. What the hell did I do? I was just trying to have a fun time underneath the Space Needle, for crying out loud, in Seattle. God. Then I got locked up. Anyways.
Google that story.
Google that story and you'll get the real story. Yeah. Locked up abroad.
That was 40 minutes of really good TV.
You saw it. I saw a little bit of it. I lived it, so I didn't really want to relive
the whole. I didn't know the whole story, and I really enjoyed it. So people should watch it, because it's well done.
I heard the actor's a really good looking guy.
He had these silver, he had blonde tips, and you know.
Yeah, they frosted his tips right out, eh? You know what the funny thing is about that story is that I thought it was a joke. I don't know if I told you this when we were shooting the shit on the phone the other night, but I just crossed Canada, and I mean, I was, Christ, I'm usually about 200 pounds, 205, whatever. I fluctuate, whatever weight is, whatever it is, but I lost like 40 pounds going across Canada, and I'm in Toronto. And all of a sudden I get an email in my inbox, and it's National Geographic asking me if they could have my story. I thought it was a joke. I thought someone was playing a goddamn prank on me. And so it was actually an email out of the United Kingdom. And I guess that's where in London is where they do all their filming. And, you know, especially for that show, especially. Anyways, I called it and I was like, is this some sort of joke? And he's like, no, we heard all about your story on this and that. He's like, we were wondering if you'd like to come to London and film for this special, blah, blah, blah. I was like, well,
how long until you were on the plane?
It was a week. I had one week of preparation, and then they stuck me in front of all these cameras, and it was a big production. So I actually had to spill my guts for 21 hours, but you can't spill, 12.
It's therapy.
Oh, it was great therapy. Absolutely. Yeah. Just spewing it all out. As long as I got a good show out of it for entertainment value. I don't know. There are days I don't want to relive, but there's also great days in there too. It enabled me to actually, you know, I got to see a lot of countries, and, yeah, I think a lot of people got to be happy or high off my supply. it wasn't like we were sending 1 pound down, times up by 1,000 a week or a month or whatever. It was planes, trains, and automobiles squared.
It's actually a good show. People should watch it.
Great. Maybe I'll watch it tonight when I'm in the bath, even though I don't take them. So anyway, so how can we follow your journey moving forward there, Linger, as far as on, social media platforms? I know a lot of people like to, know what you're up to in Kansas City.
I don't post too much on social media anymore. It's more work related and trying to get out the retire successful and helping people that way. And I think that, I do get enjoyment of putting a plan in place for people and taking that anxiety away. So that's
wonderful.
Most of my social media now is work.
Well, yeah. Let's hear about all the work that you're doing right now with, as far as in the financial ring, you know,
I'm working with IG Wealth Management, and my practice is focused on the long-term planning for people into retirement and bring them in the most tax efficient way. So people like people have a plan, like everything in life, they have a plan, but sometimes it's not the right plan. And
right.
And offer a second opinion or give them some knowledge and help them going forward is rewarding for me.
So basically you're structuring plans for them to move forward confidently where they can actually have their financial well-being kind of in check when they're not, 60 years old, having a panic at food lines.
Exactly. It just gives them some satisfaction that knowing that they're going to be fine and their money's not going to run out.
Absolutely. And I might as well ask you this too, since Dave Chizowski is our next guest. You got any good stories about good old Dave Chizowski that you can throw out there?
Just ask him if he has a cooler in his car. He'll know exactly what I mean. He was, Doty and Chizzer were two of the best teammates I ever had. They not only were they good players, tough guys, but they really cared.
Yeah.
Me as an individual. I don't know if they cared for everyone, but they cared for me as an individual. And
they said the same thing about you.
And we became really good friends that way.
That's awesome.
It's definitely a bond between the three of us.
That's great. And I'm lucky enough. I get all three of you guys on the show.
I know.
God, I hit the jackpot.
Ding, ding, ding. We should be all on all together at the same time.
We got to do that. The funny thing is after having Doty on that first show, I was like, I should almost have a separate segment called Doty Stories, because it seems like he has a lot of them.
Did he have to have a bigger camera to get the head?
Get his head in?
Picture, yeah.
I don't know, but as soon as this thing's published in a few days, I'm sending this right to him. He's going to be the first one that sees it.
I'll be getting an inbox message shortly, I'm assuming.
100%. 100%. I think he was feeling maybe a little bit overwhelmed, because I know living in Chetwynd there, I think his whole community was listening in, and it takes a lot of guts sometimes to come onto these podcasts and have courage and speak about our past and our present and what's going on, and that's why I really appreciate everyone that comes on is able to speak their truth.
And we are athletes, and Doty including me and Chizzer, we all have our insecurities too, and it's tough. It's tough getting on and being vulnerable on the camera and spilling your guts and not knowing what's good and bad and right and wrong. And so it's not easy when you're stuck in front of the camera to impress everyone or to get approval by everyone.
Absolutely. Well, I got to be completely transparent with you. I have a way easier time being on other people's podcasts than doing what I'm doing right now with you.
Yeah, I bet, because you have to be in control.
Yeah.
And you have to have some structure.
Well, that's why I want you on, so you can be my new financial advisor.
Done. Deal.
All right. I'll send you over all my bank statements for the last 5 years. We can put together a solid plan and let's go into business together today.
Perfect. Done.
Is there any documents you want to sign over, send over? I got to sign, or
I'll email them over to you after we're done.
Okay, perfect, done deal. All right, so I first want to just a shout out to our official unofficial sponsor, Tim Hortons. They've been wonderful to me and to a lot of people. Tim Horton was a wonderful hockey player as well. Left the earth at 44, much too young, but.
Extra large shot of espresso with milk.
You too, eh?
Yeah.
That's what I got too. That's what I got going right now. Did you read my goddamn mind?
That's my go-to.
That's my go-to every morning.
I could see it in the cup.
You could see it in the cup, eh? Right on. Okay, so that's a wrap for All Over the Map. Linger, thank you so much. And please follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. And if you could be so kind to leave a review, it'd be much appreciated.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Linger.